A few rust-colored leaves had begun falling on the west lawn of the Capitol in Washington, D.C., leaving the trees look like old wrought iron pillars that were flaking off rust. The sun had made its way over the Capitol, and that morning's traffic had begun to slow down after the morning rush. Clusters of tourists and school groups paraded across 3rd Street Southwest to meet their buses or angled toward the Smithsonian museums that line the National Mall. A solid-built man dressed all in black, and most notably a black overcoat, sits on a bench among the trees in Union Square near the Capitol reflecting pool. He glances up to see 6 human figures in mid-flight across the sky. A white English bulldog sits by the bench at the feet of the man and follows his owner's gaze upward and then glances back to his owner on the bench. A blur of blue and red crosses the sky to meet, then overtake the flying figures that all then shifted to follow the speeding blue blur that now turned in the sky and headed north. The clean-shaven man on the bench, whose dark hair matched his clothes and overcoat, stared up at the lead figure flying through the sky and managed a slight smile.
Oh, I'm gonna fucking have you. You cunt. Come on in, Terra. Off we go, mate.
Across the Atlantic Ocean at a carnival in the late afternoon in Cowlairs Park, Glasgow, Scotland, a young man of below average height in jeans and a green hoodie and a young woman in a tartan plaid skirt and boots, glasses and a red sweater walk by the carnival games and rides. The young man is oblivious to the attractions around him as he gestures wildly.
And they got this hangar, right? This hangar, thousands of feet underground. And there's this UFO with a pink alien in it. Because people think they're grey or green, right? But they're not. They're really pink. Because it turns out aliens are gay. And I was bricking it. I mean, I was looking at the website thinking, jinx, what if they get us onto their UFO and fruit us up? I mean, I'm not homophobic or anything, right?
But I love you, Huey. You must be the only man in Scotland who actually says jinx.
What did you say?
You're the only...
Before that...
The young woman looked at him with her brow slightly furrowed, but a slow smile was born on her lips.
Is it too soon to say that or something?
Huey stared blankly.
Robin.
Ah, come on now. Am I going to scare you off? Is that it?
The smile grew as she stepped into Huey.
I knew after a week, Huey. Never mind a month.
Huey's stare melted away to a slow smile, and his eyes drank in the lovely young woman before him.
No? Not scared at all?
Huey took her in his arms. Amidst the carnival goers on the overcast afternoon, the two young lovers kissed as though the world was only as big as their embrace. When the kiss broke, their eyes met, and then Huey stepped back in a smile, taking Robin's hand as if about to begin a grand waltz. Suddenly, the air about the young lovers seemed to compress and then pull to one side as Huey caught a blur passing before his eyes, and then being tugged to his left, turned to see the body of a large man careening sideways toward the brick wall of the public restroom building. Huey turned to see the man crumble down off the wall to the ground as a faint rushing was coming from behind him.
Out of my fucking way!
The man who spoke gave Huey a slight push in the back, causing him to take a clumsy step forward, the slight momentum making him bend forward and looking down to see he was still holding young Robin's hands, severed mid-forearm.
What? Robin? Robin?
Graphic Audio presents The Boys, Omnibus, Volume 1.
Hey, hey, what do you say? Love I do for a judgment day.
Narrated by Michael John Casey, with performances by Dave Coyne, Eric Messner, Kenyatta Rogers, Matthew Bassett, Chris Gennebach, Laura C. Harris, Scott McCormick, Christopher Walker, Richard Rowan, Amanda Forstrom, Evan Casey, Kimberly Gilbert, Jonathan Watkins, Matthew Pauly, Dawn Ursula, Nick DePinto, Frank Britton, Jonathan Church, Scott Bruffy, Steve Winall, Henry Kramer, Jonathan Foyer, Terrence Azelford, Lawrence Redmond, Chris Stinson, Andy Brownstein, Ken Jackson, Bradley Smith, Elaine Yuko Qualter, Andrew Kilpa, Colleen Delaney, Michael Glenn, Sasha Olenek, Karen Novak, and Nanette Savard. The Boys, Omnibus Volume 1.
Hey, hey, easy, my friend. The rules were made for us, not them.
At the CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, the current CIA director is scanning through recent field reports and shaking her head and glaring at a page with the heading Vought American and Use of the Seven in Future Operations.
Director Rayner, a Mr. Butcher to see you, ma'am.
Butcher?
That's right, ma'am.
Big English guy? Talks like Michael Caine?
That's him.
Director Rayner looked away from her screen to see the family photo, her smiling husband and two children, faces flushed having just come off an amusement park ride.
He hasn't got an appointment or anything, but he just walked in. I mean, he has full agency clearance. It checks out.
Send him in and hold my calls.
Rayner quickly put down the report, closed it in a file, and placed it in a side desk drawer. The dark-haired man in the long black overcoat strode into the office and offered a short, brutal smile.
Director Rayner.
Butcher.
Outside the office, the administrative assistant to Director Rayner looked over and down at Terror, the white English bulldog that sat upright staring back at him. Terror's tongue hung out and slightly off to the right side of his maw. After a few moments of silence, a slight bang of furniture came from inside the office. Terror's face swung to the door at the sound of his owner, then swung back to the assistant with what looked like a pause in his panting to smile.
Oh, you disgust me, you dirty, filthy, repulsive son of a bitch. Oh, you make me want to puke.
Wait till you see where I wipe my dick, lad.
The admin assistant reached for a white, thick disc with vents on the sides and pressed the button. The assistant nodded at the white noise machine and tried not to look at the door to negate acknowledgement of the event occurring in the director's office. Terror tilted his head at the assistant and pouted as if saddened he could no longer hear his owner. With the police and the EMTs on the scene at the Glasgow Carnival, the crushed remnants of young Robin's body, a mass of blood, tissue, bone, and the shards of her clothes were flattened against a concave impression in the brick wall. A few feet away, Huey stood motionless as EMTs tried to wrest the severed hands from his grip, and two police were taking a statement from a blue-costumed superhero with a large A on his chest.
Yeah, scanned him heading south at about Mach 3. Had to compute a pursuit curve while I was sprinting flat out across the Atlantic.
Aye.
Walk on water, man. They never see it coming. Oh, hey, where exactly am I? Just as a, you know, a matter of fact.
You're in Glasgow. America's that way.
So why don't you fuck off back there, you ball bag?
Right, son. Let him go.
Nay, don't look over there. You don't want to see that. For fuck's sake, leave the fucking arms and sedate him.
The superhero stared down at the other deceased speedster. He wore a dark red outfit, what had a fur-ringed collar, metal spiked bands on his thighs and biceps, and what appeared to be buffalo horns coming from his head. His lifeless body lay on the ground by the wall, his right arm dislocated and bent under his body, a compound fracture of his right leg just above the knee, and his neck bent at too acute an angle to be normal.
Fucking do it, will ya?
The superhero looked over at Huey and the EMTs and noticed the remnants of Robin crushed into the wall, then looked back to the police while he thumbed to the dead villain on the ground.
Well, I guess I better get this chump. Well, you guys have people to deal with this, right? Cool, I gotta get going.
What?
can't stop the A-train.
The American speedster turned, revealing another huge A across his back, and sped away, leaving the police and EMTs stunned as Huey began to slump to the ground, still holding his girlfriend's severed arms.
Robert!
Back in CIA headquarters at Langley, Director Rayner ran her hands through her hair and reset the items on her desk as Butcher pulled up and zipped his pants.
I suppose you've come over to offer your services.
I'm here to grant them, love.
Same old arrogant piece of shit.
Yeah, it works, doesn't it? You had your knickers off there like a fucking speeding bullet.
Butcher reached down to pick up the picture of Rayner's husband and kids that had gotten knocked to the floor.
Ah, the wife and kids. Do you think the lad here looks a bit like me?
Rayner snatched the frame from Butcher and placed it back on her desk.
Fucking pig, don't you dare.
How's Dakota Bob, then? He ever try to slip you a length at one of the weekly briefings?
The president is a man of total moral integrity. Just hearing someone like you talk about him is enough to turn my stomach. Whatever you've come to say, say it.
Huh. Been any new directives come out of the Oval Office lately?
Rayner's eyes went slightly wide as she tried to hide her surprise.
How the fuck...
Oh, come on, Rayner. I hear things. You know that.
Butcher sat in the wingback chair that faced Rayner and placed his black Doc Martens up on her desk, crossed at the ankles.
You know, you should have called me as soon as you heard. I know why you didn't, but you should have. Made any progress on your own as a matter of interest? Big success so far?
Rayner's face soured.
Go on.
Fucking Central Intelligence Agency. Half the time, you nubbers couldn't sort out a piss-up in a brewery. There's something like 2,000 soups in the world, and I'm willing to bet you've got no further than names and headshots on 95%. But I know them. Heroes or villains, saints or sinners, teenage or golden age, I know him. Or I know a man who does.
You know a man who does?
The legend. Won't talk to anyone but me, Madam Director, so leave it out.
Rayner's face fell, and she stared in resignation at her desktop.
Fuck.
You may as well go ahead, love.
Rayner gave a slow shake of her head, but then stopped and opened a drawer on the right side of her desk and started pulling through files.
Superpower's the most dangerous power on Earth. There's more and more of them all the time, and sooner or later, they're going to wise up. If you can dodge bullets or outrun tachyons or swim across the sun, you've better things to do with your life than save the world for the 200th fucking time.
Butcher brought his feet back to the floor and leaned forward.
One day you might twig that what you're really invulnerable to is your own humanity. And then, God help us all.
Rayner found the file she was looking for but didn't bring it out. Her eyes met Butcher's with suspicion and defiance.
You made this deal with my predecessor. The first time around, back before it all went to shit. You have expertise. We have the resources and legitimacy that allow you to operate. That much I understand. What I don't understand, what truly disturbs me because I've caught a glimpse of what's behind those eyes, is why you do this in the first place, is what might be in it for you.
Butcher leaned back in the wingback and offered a slight smirk.
I'm just a bloke in need of a job, love.
Right.
Butcher gave a slight shrug and a tilt of his head.
They have to be watched. Dakota Bob said it himself. So you need someone to watch them. Someone to gather intel, or shit, which is my preferred term, and use it to play them. Someone who's ready to remind them who's boss at a moment's fucking notice. And now and again, when the occasion demands it, you need someone who can kill one or two of the cunts. In other words, you need...
Rayner dropped a manila folder on the desktop, which bore a large stamp of classified in red diagonally across the front. Two words were on the tab. The boys. Rayner slowly opened the file and began to lead through its contents.
Where are the rest of them?
Well, MM's all right. He's close. I'm going to go see him first. I hear they found some geezer in Baltimore who had his face torn off and shoved up his arsehole. So it sounds like the female has gone back to freelancing for the mob. The Frenchman's probably sat in some cafe talking to his espresso like a mad fucking bastard. And I'm gonna need a replacement for me.
I'll take Mallory's place being in charge, since he won't be coming back.
Right, of course. You got his grandchildren murdered.
Do me a favour, love. Try not to get so wet when you mention that.
A few hours later, Butcher stood in the kitchen of a modest row house in the Anacostia neighborhood of Washington, D.C. He leaned against the counter as a heavily muscular bearded African-American man sat at a table drinking coffee from a white mug with the words badass on it.
Butcher, man, I don't know.
Come on, mate.
No, seriously.
Oh, come on. You know it's the only way it's gonna work. I mean, the other two are mad as assholes. The new lad will be an unknown quantity, at least at the start. I can show him the ropes, so I can watch them and get on with the job. I've got to have a good NCO in there to take up the slack.
I just don't know.
Butcher turned to place his mug of tea on the counter, but before he could, Mother's Milk pointed directly at the mug.
Oh, man, don't be putting that down there. I just got through cleaning there. Here.
Mother's Milk picked up a coaster from a small stack on the kitchen table and tossed it to Butcher, who placed it on the counter and then set down the mug.
Sorry, mate.
You know, I've been making some real progress with these kids I've been working with here. I feel like I'm making a difference in their lives.
What, this community thing?
Yeah, and look, we were into some bad shit even before what happened with Mallory, and I gotta tell you, I'm about a million times happier with all that behind me. If I'm gonna make a difference, I'm more comfortable doing it on a smaller scale.
And now that is bollocks.
Hey, Uncle Billy.
A young African-American girl with undoubtedly the same eyes as Mother's Milk strode into the kitchen with her hair in pigtails, hoop earrings, a tight purple tank crop top, and jean short shorts. Despite her slim frame, she had a curvaceous chest and backside. Butcher was surprised by the young girl's maturation and picked up his mug to hide his response.
Janine, honey, what we say about you dressing that way?
Oh, did we say something? Because I don't remember having a conversation. All I remember is you telling me what to do.
Hello, doll.
Honey, don't be...
Janine began waving a finger at her father.
Oh, okay. Now I don't even get to defend myself? That doesn't work for you, me having a mind of my own?
Janine?
I'm going out, dress how I like, with whoever I like, for as long as I like. Later, Uncle Billy.
The young girl turned on her heel and walked out of the kitchen. A second later, the front door opened and then slammed shut. Mother's Milk both shrugged and shook his head, then lifted his eyes to Butcher.
And then there's that.
Butcher set his mug on the coaster on the counter.
I need a piss.
Butcher crossed to the hallway, but instead of going left towards the bathroom, Butcher turned right and went out the front door. Butcher came down from the front steps and stepped up to Janine, who was talking to four young African-American men. Two standing with Janine, and two sitting in the front seat of a 1967 Chevelle, painted tangerine orange.
Boy.
Janine and the young men turned to look at Butcher stepping up, and after a beat, the car and its music was turned off.
Excuse me, lads. Sorry to bother you, but I wonder if I might have a quiet word with Janine here.
The two men standing outside the car tilted their heads back in defiance. One wearing a white ball cap and an MAC tattoo on his neck remained silent while the other, sporting cornrows, canted his head at Butcher.
What you supposed to be, motherfucker? You fucking English?
Uncle Billy?
The man in the ball cap took a step toward Butcher and lifted his shirt to reveal a gun in the front of his pants.
You want a word, white boy? Yo, check it out. You want a word with this?
Butcher quickly reached out and snatched the gun from the young man's pants. He then turned it flat in his left hand, then brought it up, and slammed his right fist into the gun with enough force to bend the weapon just above the trigger housing. Butcher held out the useless weapon, now creased with the knuckle pattern of his right fist.
Glock's a wanker's gun, son. Now fuck off.
The two young men turned and jumped into the back of the convertible. Butcher tossed the gun into the lap of the passenger in the front seat as the driver started the car.
Later day.
Janine kept her eyes on the departing car.
I don't believe this. I don't believe you.
She then turned around to face Butcher.
Just who the hell do you think you...
Yeah, Janine, when did you start speaking to your jar like that?
What?
He works every hour God sends, so he can look after you. He feeds you, clothes you, sends you to school and puts a roof over your head. You have no idea how lucky you are to have a bloke like him for a father. Do you know that?
Janine stared, stunned, her mouth slightly agape.
Your mum, on the other hand, is a stupid drunk slag who couldn't be trusted to wipe her own arse, never mind yours. I know. I was with your dad when he pulled you out of that shithole she had you in, and you not even 6 months old. Well, sort yourself out, Janine. Stop dressing like a tot and hanging about with tossers. Do your own work. Don't bring up your cow of a mother. Now get back in there and show your old dad some bloody respect.
It was in the afternoon the following day that Butcher stepped out of Audrey's concerto with a scone and a tea to go when he stopped on the east side of 3rd Street in the Bay Ridge neighborhood of Brooklyn, New York. Butcher was a couple of blocks from Audrey's when he spotted the short figure in a black overcoat, similar to his own, walking on the other side of the street. The short figure stopped in front of a nondescript row house and stepped up to the door. The young woman stepped up to the front door of the row house and waited.
Frankie's gonna talk to Jimmy Pockets, he's gonna straighten this whole thing out. Until then, we lie low.
Hey, Frankie still ain't answering his phone.
Right, so he's talking to Jimmy. He's got it switched off.
No, it ain't switched off. He just ain't picking up.
Maybe he ain't in no shape to pick up.
Aw, oh, shit.
Listen, will you two faggots fucking knock it off?
The short figure knocked on the front door and then lowered her gaze.
You hear that?
What?
Someone knocking on the fucking door.
Let me see. Some girl.
She cute?
She's just fucking standing there, staring at the door.
Go get rid of her, will ya?
The figure lifted her eyes to the door.
Yeah, can I help you?
The short figure raised her gaze to a beefy man in a velour tracksuit. Her eyes searched the man's unshaven face for something.
Well?
Just some fucking chink. Ain't said shit. Looks like she's gonna start bawling her eyes out.
Ah, shit we don't need. Show her some pictures of kittens or some fucking thing.
The petite female's eyes went from pained to rage. A rage that stayed in her eyes as the man at the door craned his head toward his companions.
Yeah, I'll show my fucking dick. Maybe she can make herself useful.
The small woman charged at the much larger man, her hands grabbing his throat. They stumbled together back into the row house, and a beat later, the door slammed shut. Across the street, Billy Butcher sipped his tea and kept his eyes fixed on the windows of the row house.
What the fuck? No, Jesus! Get the fucking shotgun! Ah! Now! Get the fuck away from me! Ah!
Butcher stood still, waiting for the inevitable.
No! No!
Butcher stared at the one window where the recent occupants had pulled the curtains back to look out the door. Butcher swallowed another sip of tea as what appeared to be just the skin of a man's face slapped against the inside of the unobscured window and slowly slid off and out of sight inside the structure.
Oh, lovely.
In a large window of the Jitterbean Coffee Shop in Arcata, Northern California, a stubble-headed man in a black overcoat with old-time aviator goggles perched atop his head sat staring into his open left palm while he brings a light steaming espresso cup halfway to his face.
We were lovers for a while, of course. But time goes by, like wine, like autumn leaves that tumble one by one into the Seine. And one day I came home and found her gone. En France, which is to say, in France, we have a saying, a bientôt, see you soon. And so that is, or ever that might be, if and so is right, we come to this.
A few feet away, three big men sat at another table. Their clothing was emblazoned with the Humboldt County Department of Transportation. But their faces wore expressions of disgust and anger as they stared at the slim-built man in the overcoat.
Goddamn surrender monkey.
French faggot.
The Frenchman in the overcoat turned his head and gave a hard stare at the three road workers.
The fuck you looking at, cheese eater?
The slim-built man slowly slid the aviator goggles over his eyes. The Frenchman's chair flew back against the wall as he quickly stood and charged the table of his detractors.
Huh? What the fuck? Jesus.
The Frenchman quickly grabbed the jacket of the man to his right and pulled the man in and thrust his head forward. A headbutt had vacated all of the man's four front teeth. Letting go, the Frenchman turned left as with one motion. He swung his right fist at the man in the middle. The Frenchman caught this man on the jaw with such force that the man's jaw seemed to sway off to the side of his face. As he fell back and away, two teeth angling out of the man's mouth flew off in another direction. The Frenchman in the overcoat's right hand seemed to follow to the last of his detractors. The Frenchman in the goggles pulled the last man's head down as his right knee came up. A crunching blow sent a wave through the man's legs. The Frenchman pulled the man's head up again and then let go. The man, whose nose now seemed flat and turned to one side of his face, seemed to pause and then collapse in a heap on the floor.
Oi, Frenchy, those lads getting away your cafe au lait?
The Frenchman in the overcoat quickly turned to see Butcher in the doorway of the coffee shop. He lifted up his goggles and a wide smile came to his face.
Monsieur Charcutier!
Frenchy crossed to Butcher, his arms open wide. Before he could protest, Frenchy quickly grabbed Butcher and embraced him, then leaned back and kissed Butcher's cheeks.
Right then, that's it. Off now, people will talk, son.
Vive plus longtemps cordial!
Yeah, well, let's be getting cordial someplace else. Come on.
Butcher crossed to the door. Frenchy followed close behind.
Pourquoi, mon ami?
Butcher turned and put his arm around Frenchy's shoulder.
Well, let's say you need to pack your kepi, Frenchy. We're being called up.
It was just days after Robin's death when Huey heard a knock on his apartment door.
Mr. Campbell? Mr. Hugh Campbell? I wonder if we might come in for a moment.
What? Yeah, I suppose.
There were three of them. Three men in the same suit with similar ties. Huey hadn't seen anyone since the funeral. He hadn't tried to talk to anyone. And then these three men just arrived. Huey sat as their collective pitch and requests washed over him.
Vaught American, deepest condolences.
Such a tragic loss. Truly, truly terrible.
With the agency attached to the Home Office.
Early days. But we felt it important to keep you in the loop.
Events like these have all kinds of ramifications.
More than you can imagine.
Means different things to different people.
Who sadly might see this tragedy merely as ammunition.
Even a personal agenda.
Brings us to the legal question.
The whole issue of compensation's an extremely tricky...
Oh, no.
No.
Understand? We understand. The last thing we want to do is rush you.
Don't want fucking compensation.
Goodness no, Mr. Campbell.
Just want her back.
He's an American. Well spotted.
That's all.
Part of an exchange program.
You two weren't actually married.
For your trauma. To help you.
Your own protection.
Not to pursue legal proceedings. And then we could reciprocate.
Sign here.
I need her.
Made the right decision.
Just...
Be out of your hair.
Need her back.
Well done. We keep the copies.
Please.
Let ourselves out. Have a nice day.
Please.
In another office on the CIA headquarters campus, a man in his 40s of just below average height, with slightly oversized ears, sat behind his desk scrolling through video entries. He double-clicks a video on his computer and begins to undo the front of his pants and picks up a pump bottle of hand lotion to have in close reach.
Coming up next from the Paralympics, the women's javelin competition.
Mr. Kessler?
Yes?
There's a Mr. Butcher here to see you, sir. A Mr. Butcher?
The CIA deputy section officer struggled to fix his pants, clicked away from the video, and fumbled over to a window, roughly trying and failing to get quietly through the window.
Mr. Kessler?
Just need a minute.
Sir, the man, Mr. Butcher, he just... Hello?
Kessler stumbled to his feet just outside his first floor office window. and immediately turned to run. He stopped and was grabbed by the very man who had come to see him.
Hello, monkey.
Butcher slammed his knee into Kessler's groin and then let the smaller man crumble to the ground at his feet, who then began to writhe in pain.
That's just to let you know I'm back, son. I'm back and everything's gonna be just like it used to be. Exactly like it used to be, monkey. So you have a good old wriggle there. And when you're done, we'll go back in and you can have your girl make me a nice cup of tea. Proper tea. Not that shit with a fucking tampon string in it, you septic sphincter's tea. Then I'll have a shafty at your files, all right? Suit ya?
Yeah.
Nice one.
A few moments later, Butcher sat at Kessler's desk, going through a series of reports on Kessler's computer. Kessler sat in an office chair next to the desk, a small ice pack pressed to his groin, as Terror sat off to one side, eyeing a potted plant for a renal contribution.
Fuck me. Lot more of it about all of a sudden, ain't there? Soups are getting fucking careless. Getting downright lackadaisical. Here's Incineron, what gets shot down over some little Colombian village, and the seven make a donation to the government. And lo and fucking behold, FARC recruitment goes through the roof.
Butcher sipped from a generic CIA mug with a tea bag hanging off the side and stared at the mug as if it had just insulted him.
Here, monkey. Who's this?
Kessler leaned forward in the chair and craned his neck toward the monitor.
That was last week. A few days ago, actually. Phase One damage team went to see him yesterday. He signed the release without a fight.
Huh. Never even mentioned money. That's usually the first thing they start screaming about.
Butcher double-clicked an image to enlarge the picture of a young man with a close-cropped light brown hair and a goatee and mustache.
Well, hello there, Mr. Hugh Campbell. Fellow subject of the Crown, I see.
Why do you need five anyway? I mean, the female alone...
Because I fucking do. And since when do you ask me questions, monkey?
Butcher glared at the smaller man still holding an ice pack to his groin.
Right. Sorry.
Butcher looked back to the monitor as a slow smile arrived on his lips.
Well, Glasgow it is then.
For days, Hughie Campbell wandered around Glasgow in a grief-induced stupor. As the four walls of his apartment seemed to close in, he would take to the streets and eventually would find himself at or near some place that reminded him of Robin. Today, after walking past her favorite bookshop and the pub where they met, Hughie found himself on a bench in George Square. He watched as the other locals walked about, a mother with a child in a stroller, some French tourists, and then an elderly couple who reminded him of his own parents and made him think about a future with Robin he would never have.
It's not fair. It can't be.
Hughie slowly placed his hands on his head as if fighting dizziness.
It was all going right for me for once. Well, just stop fucking turning, will ya?
Hughie held his head in his hands, shuddering and weeping, as a tall man with dark hair and wearing a black overcoat took a seat on the bench. The man half turned to Hughie and rested his right arm on the bench back.
Oi, you all right, mate?
No.
Oh, shit. You lose someone, is that it?
Hey.
Butcher stood and turned to Hughie.
Look, I'm sorry, mate. I didn't mean to bother you. I'll leave you to it, all right?
Hughie lifted his face from his hands, his cheeks and eyes wet with tears.
What? What is that fucking noise?
Oh, it's one of those little dogs. Shih Tzu or whatever you call them. Horrible little things, eh?
That's a good boy, Benjamin. Such a good boy.
You know, I hate those bastards.
Butcher looked over at an elderly woman holding the leash of a Shih Tzu. As the dog defecated, Butcher looked back to Hughie.
Yeah, me too. And she's not going to clean that up, is she? She's just going to leave it there for some poor sod to stab it.
A slow smile crept across Butcher's face as he gave Hughie an up nod.
Here, do you want to see something funny?
Huh?
Watch this. Terra, Terror mate.
Butcher thumbed to the elderly woman's dog.
Fuck it.
Terror shuffled away and over to the other dog and immediately mounted the Shih Tzu and began humping it with wild abandon.
Oh my! Oh, Benjamin! You awful brute! Get off my little Benjamin!
That is the maddest fucking thing I've seen in ages.
Well, it seems to have put a bit of smile on your face, didn't it?
Butcher looked to Huey.
Listen, I'm not going to fuck around, Huey. I know who you are. I know what happened to you. It's the reason I'm here in the first place. I wanted to have a word with you about it.
Huey looked up and towards Butcher.
What?
Let's go for a walk. Terror.
Huey stood and stared after Butcher as Terror ran past to catch up to his owner.
What did you just say? Wait!
Huey quickly strode to catch up.
Oh, Benjamin! Are you all right, my sweet?
What do you mean you know who I am? Why do you want to talk to me?
Huey stopped.
Listen, who are you?
Butcher stopped and turned around and stepped to Huey with a warm smile, his right hand extended.
Butcher's my name. People call me Billy.
Oh, well, I'm Huey, but you seem to know that already. Some people call me Wee Huey, I suppose.
The two men shook.
Very pleased to meet you, Huey. Come on.
So...
Well, I was sorry what happened to you, girl. Tell you the truth, I thought it was diabolical. And I know they came to see you afterwards, made you sign some load of bollocks when you were in a no-bloody state to think straight. Bang out of order, that was.
Well, who were they? I mean, how do you know all this?
I used to run a team, and the job of stopping the sort of shit that happened to Robin. Or if we couldn't stop it, we made sure the guilty party was in no condition to do it again. It's superheroes, right? The Supes. We were the ones who kept an eye on them.
Superheroes?
Yeah, you know, the Long Underwear Brigade. They treat the world like their fucking playground.
Eh?
Anyway, it would now appear our time's come round again. So I'm going around trying to put the team back together. Matter of fact, I'm headed to the States tonight to do exactly that.
So, who do you work for?
The CIA.
CIA? What, the Americans?
Yeah.
But they're cons.
Well, yeah, they are. But I want to hit the Supes, and they're the ones with the resources to do it. I mean, what else am I going to do? Use my billion-dollar inheritance and operate out of a cave.
Butcher paused, then crossed the street and stepped up on the walkway along the River Clyde, leaving Huey to jog to keep up.
Well, do you know all about all the secret stuff? Like, you know, like Area 51 and the Illuminati and everything?
That's your thing, is it?
Oh, man, it's fucking amazing. I mean, the shite them people get up to putting subliminals on TV and transplanting folks' brain tissue with alien DNA and all the other stuff. I mean, you're talking about the people who really run the world.
Oh, bloody hell. Huey, not even in their wildest dreams could those tits run the world. And it's not secret societies. It's not the Illuminati or the Department X meeting in a room no one even knows exists. It's none of that.
Butcher shook his head as they continued down the riverwalk.
It's just a plain old company. Corporations. Fat blokes and geeks sit in offices trying to think up ways to watch people. To do nothing more than keep the world exactly the way it is, which means power in the hands of the powerful, which means the status quo.
And nothing's a bigger threat to the status quo than superheroes.
Butcher eyed Huey with a sideways glance.
You're smarter than you look, aren't you, my son?
Well, aye, but, I mean, working for them?
I told you, I want to stomp on these bastards. Stop them fucking things up for everyone. If you know somewhere I'll get a better offer than that, I'm all ears.
The two continued to walk by the River Clyde, and although Butcher was looking straight ahead, he could feel a look and an unspoken question coming from Huey.
All right, look, you shake hands with the devil, but you do a bit of good. You maybe save a few lives, and at the very least, you keep the fucking Supes guessing. Now, at me.
Huey slowed his pace to a stop. Butcher slowed and stopped as well.
Are you... Do you want me for this?
Butcher turned, and his eyes met those of the younger, smaller man.
I'll tell you what I want. Someone who's felt it. All that arrogance, that fucking disdain they have for us, where our lives mean nothing more than a rat's. Our deaths are barely an embarrassment. and all I do is walk away.
Aye, but I don't know how to... I mean, the stuff you're talking about, you must need to be able to fight and spy on people and all that.
Huey then looked up and down the river path at anyone who might be approaching. Butcher dropped his head a bit, then looked up and canted his head to the Portland Street Suspension Bridge.
That's all just details, Huey. You can learn that. See, I read the report those three wankers filed. I know you didn't ask for money.
They boarded the bridge and began to cross it.
You didn't want a payoff, so you could live your life in denial. Try and pretend some fucker didn't get away with killing your girlfriend. That's not what you wanted at all.
Butcher stopped and turned to the rail and looked east. Huey joined him.
I'm out of my depth. I'm sorry. There's no way I can do this or anything even like it. I can't even begin to imagine the kind of things you'd have to know how to do. I've got to, you know, got to try and get on with everything.
The two men stood there, Huey looking down at the river current moving past, and Butcher at the darkening horizon.
He laughed his bollocks off about your girl, you know.
Huey's gaze lifted to the taller man.
What?
A-Train. He's one of the seven. You know, Earth's mightiest and all that. Bringing justice to all. Avengers of the innocent. He was freaked out at first, but the others talked him down. They can't risk one of their own losing the faith.
How do you know?
Butcher turned his head to Huey and grinned.
I bugged the Seven's HQ, mate. Listen to the tapes if you want. It's happened before, it'll happen again. Unless someone does something about it.
But that's the bit I don't understand. They've got superpowers. I mean, how are you going to make an impression on them?
Ways and means, Huey.
Butcher leaned back from the rail and pulled a thick brown business envelope from inside his black overcoat.
Right. I've got to get moving. Yeah.
Butcher tossed the envelope to Huey, who turned and caught it.
There's a couple of grand in there. Come to New York for a week or two. Give us a ring when you find a place to stay. The number's on the back of the envelope. Have a look at what we do. I'll show you the ins and outs of it. Then you can make up your mind. Come and meet the boys.
Butcher looked over to his dog, staring out over the water through the rail mesh a bit further down the bridge.
Oi, Terra. Nice talking to you, Huey. See ya.
Huey looked down and slightly opened the envelope to reveal a thick wad of American currency.
Jengs.
High in the clouds over the lower bay off the coast of Long Island, the massive aerial base of the Seven, VAB-1, hovered. Several large rotor-powered engines stabilized the floating headquarters of the greatest superhero team under the Vought American umbrella. Five large arms that branched out from the center contained long panels that at once looked to resemble fan blades but were not used for propulsion, save for one side of the panels that were solar cells for the onboard electrical systems and to shift as flaps when navigating wind currents and resistance during transit. The floating base had two shortened runways that were angled off from each other, much like a naval aircraft carrier. A large red Seven was emblazoned on the side section of a large circular superstructure. Numerous antennae and two radar dishes, one circular and one oblong, all with lights as well as strobes. The top of the aerial base had an inner circular smooth hub. A large black-lined yellow star with a Seven was at the center of the inner hub roof. A young blonde woman in a white outfit with yellow trim, mid-length dress, cape, yellow boots and gloves stood on the flight deck, not too far from the retractable runways.
Jetways retracting. Repeat. Jetways retracting. Prepare for outer doors to close. Repeat. Prepare outer doors to close.
The beautiful young woman stared out and down at pieces of Manhattan and Long Island that she could see through the clouds below.
Well, hello there. I heard they were bringing you up here. All in one piece, I see.
The young woman turned to see a tall, blonde, muscular man in a somewhat military-style uniform. It was blue with red gauntlets and boots. He wore a striped cape of red and white that appeared to be a call to Old Glory herself. A golden chain clasp went across the front, and a perched eagle was the design for the shoulder plate that was connected to the cape on the man's right shoulder. The left shoulder was merely draped by the cape. The man strode up and offered a warm, welcoming smile.
Glad you made it.
Oh my goodness, I didn't think you'd be here. Permission to come aboard VAB-1?
Granted. And you're our newest recruit. Why on earth wouldn't I come to meet you?
Because you're the homelander.
John. And it's not starlight all the time, is it?
Annie January.
Well, welcome to the Seven, Annie.
The homelander extended his hand to shake, but shifted his grip, palm up, so Annie had to place her hand on his.
Flight deck doors closing. Repeat. Flight deck doors closing.
Come on. I can give you a bit of the nickel tour before our Seven update meeting.
Great.
The two made their way down a corridor as Homelander gestured ahead, and Annie glanced about like a nervous student on the first day of school.
We take this main deck when we arrive. There's security up ahead for check-in when boarding. Vought likes to know when we're on board.
I still can't believe I'm actually here.
It comes as no surprise to me, Annie. Your performance in the trials was remarkable. We allow very few newcomers in the Seven. We simply cannot afford to take the risk.
I know. Please don't think I'm not taking this seriously. It's just, you know, I've admired you for as long as I can remember. Your incredible kindness, how wise you are.
You're gonna have me blushing in a moment.
Oh no, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
You know, this is amazing. I mean, back in Des Moines with the Young Americans, we didn't have anything like this. And there were times we had to meet at my aunt's apartment.
Do you think you'll miss them?
I'm sure I will.
Is there someone special?
Yes. Drummer boy, from the team. We actually met at Capes for Christ in one of the junior ministries.
That's great.
And of course, we don't want to ruin things. We're waiting.
That's great.
The two stopped walking as they entered a large meeting room with a V-shaped conference table at the center. One wall was the view outside, and as clouds slowly shifted down, Homelander pressed a button on the wall near the door, and a tinted shade began to descend on the window that looked out.
Oh, this is where you...
Yes. Have a seat. Relax. You've earned it.
Which one?
Homelander pointed off from the center of the V.
How about that one? It was lamplighters. You'll be on my right.
Annie slowly walked to the high-backed leather conference chair as Homelander strolled around the long way about the table.
I'm really here. I know it's probably only temporary, but...
Homelander reached the other side to his chair. As Annie stared down at the chair, she slowly pulled it back. Homelander then started unclasping his cape at his left shoulder.
Well, I know that's what we said in the beginning, but I'll be honest with you, Annie. I can't see the lamplighter coming back.
Annie eased into the seat and placed her hands on the tabletop, and then looked about the room a bit.
So I thought you'd have all kinds of trophies here, you know? Memorabilia from all your old battles.
We did, but it just seemed a smack of triumphalism. I was never comfortable with that kind of thing. Some of the others disagree, but I prefer to see what we do as spreading peace, not inflicting defeat.
That's so true. This... You know, it's the pinnacle of everything I've ever hoped for. To serve with the Seven. I mean, there's just no higher a super person can go.
Annie lowered her eyes to the tabletop.
I told you, Annie. You deserve it. You've worked so hard. There's just one final test for you to pass. And I know you're going to excel at that, too.
Annie raised her eyes to see that Homelander had undone his pants, which were down to his thighs. His hands were at his sides, and his hips and penis aimed directly at Annie. That same warm and welcoming smile on his face as he gazed down at the now horrified young Annie.
Suck it.